So near listening to the music, Rosemary turns to me and goes, "Hey, I think that's the group Lettuce." And I said, "I don't. Oh, you're right, Rosemary. It is. It's
I'm
Lettuce.
Brilliant.
You are." And I thank you.
I know all you the musical it. Groups named for vegetables.
You nailed it.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday, the 24th of June. A delight to have you on with us as we discuss what is going on in our world at large. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get started. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be going from 9 to, we'll be going to 10 this morning. The governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, will be speaking with Alan Chartok beginning at 10 o'clock. In the meantime, let me introduce everybody. We have Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much.
Excellent. We like fantastic. Investigative reporter visiting us, Rosemary Armeo. Good
Hello.
Morning.
Hello.
Back. If those of you who are just back from holiday, Rosemary is with us for a couple of weeks. She was in Jordan and now is home on break before going to Sarajevo.
Right.
So we're delighted to have you, and we thank you for being here.
It's fun to be back.
Excellent. We also have a newbie. We have a new guy on the block. Isn't that exciting? He is a former senior political correspondent for Radio Television Hong Kong, and you covered the return of Hong Kong from British to Chinese sovereignty.
That is true.
1997, and now doing incredible reporting for the Berkshire Eagle.
So I'm a columnist. Yep.
Columnist. And writing about what's going on in Hong Kong. So we thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Alan Chartok is with us this morning. How you doing, my friend?
Well, it's getting better.
Yep.
It's getting better, no question about it.
Good.
But you never want to get a concussion, everybody. When that happens, it's not the nicest thing in the world. However, I have to say, I looked up Mr. Morrison, and it's very, very impressive. So I think we're in good stead. And I don't know how you keep getting these great guys, Joe, but you do it.
Well, in this case, Francis wrote to us and said, "Hey, this is what I know." And I said, "Wow, that's cool." So thank you very much. Let us go to the subjects of the day, and we'll get going here. And then, of course, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, if I have not given that information prior, panel at WAMC.org. The president gave a series, the big interview this weekend was on Meet the Press to Craig, what was his name?
Chuck Todd.
Thank you, Chuck Todd. Thank you, Alan.
my pleasure.
That went blank.
The guy with the concussion is helping you.
Yeah. Feels good. Yeah. That was
Happy
my
Monday.
Weekend. So, obviously we talked about this on Friday, but the story still is Iran and what is going on in Iran and what happened. So, some framed it as another empty threat from a leader whose bark is consistently worse than his bite. Some saw a method to the perceived madness, a potentially shrewd act of brinkmanship. This from the New York Times. And others considered it simply the latest act of an America that long before President Trump has often oscillated from isolation to intervention and back. Mr. Trump's order to attack Iran on Thursday in retaliation for its downing of a spy drone and his abrupt reversal minutes before American forces carried it out have intensified global doubts about the president's judgment and the power wielded by the United States of America. Meanwhile, that the president has announced that there will be new sanctions today, and there is also a lot of interest in what could possibly be happening regarding cyber attacks in retaliation, that U.S. businesses are preparing for Iranian hacks after an American cyber attack. So those are the things that we are going on. Switching over to the Washington Post real quick, and their headline this morning, Trump's erratic policy moves put the national security at risk, according to experts. And they say his approach on immigration and customs enforcement raids, Mexican tariffs, and Iran is also politically risky. But we'll get into that in a second. Alan, Want to start us off?
Well, the only thing that I can keep coming up with is that this guy thinks he's smart, Trump, and he injects himself and he brings us up to the pinnacle or to the brink, and then he backs off. Here's the problem with that. Sometimes you make mistakes, and sometimes it's too late. You know, World War One happened over, you know, something that it shouldn't have happened over, and it was catastrophic. I think this guy is playing with fire, and he thinks he's smart, but I don't think he is.
The analysis in the Washington Post today said, is the president capable of playing both arsonist and fireman?
I think it's reality TV. I don't think he's smart. I think he has a talent on drama and use of the media. And here it is again. Will he attack? Will he pull back? Is he compassionate? Is he tough? And we're all sitting on the edge of our seats waiting. Here's the thing. I could even forgive that. And there may be some advantage to it in dealing with some countries. But what's he want from Iran? Do we know that? He pulled out of the nuclear deal that they were paying attention to. In order to get what? He is enacting dire sanctions against him, which doesn't help the people. Doesn't hurt the government so much as it hurts the people of Iran. And it's turning them, actually, into more of supporters of their government, just as we, if we were under attack, would support our government more, even if it were Trump. So what's the goal? What's the goal of all this? I don't think he has one.
Well, I agree with you. But, Rosemary, it isn't a goal in terms of what he wants from them. He needs an enemy, and they're the enemy. They're the selected enemy. When you say, what does he want from them? That's right. What does he want from them? The answer is, it isn't what he wants from them. It's that he needs them as the boogeyman. I think it's that simple.
Yeah. And imagine being Iran. Your economy is going into shambles. Europe is not standing up to defend you. Even to go into nuclear development, which would annoy the United States, costs more than they have now resources to put into. So what do they do?
I think the issue is Hezbollah. That's the issue. The issue is Iran's support for Hezbollah and Hezbollah's role in the Middle East. I think that's, to me, that's the big one. And Hezbollah also has a competitive role with the Palestine Liberation Organization in control over the camps and the whole Palestinian question. So that, I think, is really the issue more than what does he want from the Iranian people.
I think Americans actually have to back away from Yemen, Lebanon, the Palestine. So just submission is what he wants.
Maybe.
Good luck with that.
Francis is nodding solemnly. I'll let the record show for our radio listeners.
This being radio.
Yes. Yeah. But that doesn't... What you're saying, Francis, seems to indicate that he does have a long game here. And that... I don't know. I mean, it doesn't appear that there's a whole lot of thought in this.
Well, it seems that the United States, this administration, has put the United States in the position of supporting Saudi Arabia
and
its plays in the Middle East. And the competitor is the Revolutionary Guard in Iran. So I think you back one side and you go against another. But I think the fact that Hezbollah is playing a big role in Lebanon and the Palestinian issue the Trump administration has put its money on a different horse.
Well, look, I've never thought the Iranians were good people. They're not. No, I'll take that back. The Iranians are good people. The problem is with their leadership. And they are troublemakers. And I think Francis is exactly right. That's what's happening. So I'm trying to think of what's going on here. And it's probably that Netanyahu and Trump are pals. And that would follow from what Francis is saying. I think there's probably some wisdom in that.
Yeah, and let's look at the side we have picked, because the government of Saudi Arabia are such good guys, really excellent. And same with Netanyahu, not corrupt at all, not unrepresentative of people at all. I don't know how that decision got made. I think Trump makes lots of errors, but in foreign policy especially, it's just dire consequences.
Sarah?
Yeah, I was going to follow what Francis was saying with that's the one thing that the administration, and I'm separating the administration from the president, because I think we have to. Because I think Rosemary's right. The president says whatever he needs to say in order to stay in the news or to drum up his base, which national security is a great way mm-hmm. to get that base worked up. But also that John Bolton has been consistent in labeling very groups within Iran as terrorist organizations, coming, you know, making that connection stronger and stronger and stronger to make it clear to the rest of the world that this is about fighting terrorism, which could make sense in some version of reality. But as you're all pointing out, it just doesn't line up with the geopolitical arrangement.
You know, I almost could go with that. If you could say ending terrorism everywhere is Trump's goal and he's going about it, I would say, okay, at least he's trying. But I don't believe that. I believe he thought that foreign policy would be easy. He didn't want a State Department. He doesn't have ambassadors in a whole bunch of places because he thought he could just go in there and be Trump and they would roll down. They would just fall down at his feet. Yeah. And I think he's found it hard. He thought that with North Korea, certainly.
And Germany, you know, has put into question whether or not the tanker was shot. It was the aggression was from Iran. So it's interesting that Europe is not backing Iran, but it's not backing the United States either.
So I have some problems with that, Sarah, for whatever it's worth, and that's probably not much. But you know, we have keep duking it out on the program about the difference between the administration, in other words, the Boltons and all the other guys, and Trump. I don't think there is a difference. I think Trump is playing chess, and I think he has all of those guys. He appointed all of them. He knows what they're going to say. I don't think they say anything without knowing that they can get by him. And I'm worried about this business that Trump somehow is different from the guys who are working for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, the thing that I find disturbing, and maybe this is a minor petty little thing, but we're talking about war. We don't have a defense secretary.
No.
I mean, we seem to be...
Who once upon a time was called the Secretary for War.
Right. I mean, we seem to be showing up at the baseball game with only three or four players as opposed to a full team. That should be concerning, shouldn't it?
And a really mouthy coach.
And a really...
Who the refs want to kick out all the time.
And a really mouthy coach. That's right. It's, I don't know. It just seems bizarre. And to Alan's point, so it doesn't that indicate, Alan, that you can't, to fill those positions, you have to find more people who are going to say the stuff that you want them to say?
Oh, I think that's easy to do. I think he can find the people he wants to say what he says. And I think in the end, you were right. You guys were right about the coach. He thinks he could be the Secretary of War. He could do all of it. The Secretary of War, the Secretary of Defense.
State. Yeah. Because he's eliminated diplomacy at all. He doesn't, it's deal with me. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and what's fascinating, I read this morning, I know we'll talk about the border in a minute, but overnight it broke that a 20-year-old woman and I believe it was three children have died. Trying to cross into the United States. And the local sheriff's department tweeted this morning that the FBI was going to take over the investigation.
Oh, my God.
That's odd to me. But it seems
it
like...
It would normally go how? It would be normally be...
It depends on the... I would imagine that it would be the county sheriff's office and possibly the state police.
Well, but if it's cross-border crime...
Yeah.
They're entering the United States. It seems to me the Federal Bureau of Investigation could conceivably have a role.
But why not Customs and Border Protection or DHS?
I don't know the circumstances, but if there's any question something about the death that would make it an investigation.
It seems like Trump thinks that he can play all of these roles himself as well. So, I mean, just inserting the federal government in a lot of different places in dangerous ways.
Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have much more to discuss, and we will do so. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Francis Moriarty, and Sarah Rogerson make up our panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll return right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Francis Moriarty, and Sarah Rogerson, and we welcome your letters. We have a couple. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to the issue of Hong Kong. Barbara writes, I think we have to remember when considering what does Trump want vis-a-vis Iran, that he started wanting to undo whatever Obama did that was successful. The treaty, he said, we got to undo that. There was no other reasoning. There was no other goal. And everyone overlays real thinking on it when there is none for the president.
I fear she is correct.
Mike says, this one is easy. If one bullet or missile was fired in this Iran conflict, someone told Trump that even Bill de Blasio would have a good chance of beating him in 2020. Russ writes, Trump has no alternative to war with Iran. Iran regards the sanctions as economic welfare and will continue to act to raise the insurance rates on Persian Gulf shipping. Eventually, the result would be a provocation that will trigger American military action. European governments will make a maximum effort to resist involvement. The result will be a long, smoldering military confrontation with Iran with no planned peace. It will be Iran that will wait for regime change, not the U.S. Anyone on any of that? Hearing nothing, we move on to Hong Kong. This is a subject that we've been talking about the last several weeks, and we welcome Francis to this conversation as an expert on Hong Kong and someone who has written about this for a long time. The protests in Hong Kong have heightened tensions between the territory and China and generated headlines the world over. They have also deepened unease many thousands of miles away on U.S. campuses. The protests of last weekend and the weekend before have been major and just growing in number. Meanwhile, Francis Moriarty, who, if you missed the early introduction, was a senior political reporter for Public Broadcaster Radio Television Hong Kong and has covered Hong Kong for a long time. Give us a brief sense of what you did there and then what you make of this situation now.
Well, that's a big bite. I went out to Hong Kong. I was working in Paris at the time, and I was offered a job in Hong Kong. Went out there, worked for a wire service for a year and a half, and then worked for a couple of radio stations, helped us set up a commercial radio station, the first new one in Hong Kong in about 30-odd years. And worked as the assignment editor and political editor for that. And then went over to the public broadcaster, which is a BBC model organization. Of course, it was formed under the British when it was a British colony. And it's a government-funded public broadcaster and has the highest credibility rating consistently of any news organization in Hong Kong, in both English and the Chinese language news, because it broadcasts actually in three languages. There's also a Mandarin channel. I worked for the English channel.
So what do you make of this, of what we are seeing now? Your latest column in the Berkshire Eagle talks about Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, and basically saying that she is a dead woman walking.
Well, there's a couple of nicknames for Carrie Lam.
Can you say them on the radio?
Yes, I can.
Okay, all right.
One is called Carrie the Can, which kind of describes what she has to do. Is take responsibility for policies that she can't really form. I think one of the worst positions anybody can ever find themselves in is to have a job where you have all the responsibility, but you don't have the authority. And that's the position she essentially, and every chief executive finds herself or himself in. So that's a core problem right there. The other nickname for her is Curried Lamb, which means the dish is cooked and ready to be served, and that's kind of her position.
You have her in your column as showing up for work, but not really doing anything there because she can't.
Because she has no political capital. She has no personal credibility. her attempts to regain credibility by having interviews set up for her in which she came off as extraordinarily condescending. Mm. You know, the Hong Kong people are like my little children and I'm the mother to everybody. And that is not what people wanted to hear. They did not find her apologies, her pro forma apologies. She may feel pain, who knows, but it just didn't come off as sincere. And people wanted to hear a sincere apology and they didn't get it. And they're getting the sort of things that one has to give under the system, which everybody there understands. You know, you can't blame the boss. So in the boss in this case is Xi Jinping and the Central People's Government. You can't say we're carrying out policies that are being directed from there and they're not working. The fault has to be at a local level. The policy can't be wrong. Only the implementation can be wrong. So you have to apologize for your poor implementation, your poor timing, you're not understanding this, you're not understanding that. The fact that you are chosen through a system that guarantees you're not going to have much credibility when you take over the job is not discussed. It's understood by everybody in the street, but it's not discussed as part of the problem. So she's stuck between a rock and a proverbial hard place. Let me just come at your question another way, Joe.
Okay.
Before the handover, I was speaking with a fellow who was very well known locally in Hong Kong as a top PR guy. And I said to him, look, this SAR is going to be starting up. If you were given the account for the government, what would your PR strategy be? He said, I wouldn't take the account. I said, come on, we're just chatting here back and forth. You know, you can share, well, whatever. He said, no, I'm being serious with you. He said, you have a brand problem. The brand is China. He said, there's nothing, when you've got a product and the brand has a bad name, no matter what the product is, people are going to assume it's not good from the start. He said, so you can't counteract that. I wouldn't take the account. And that is exactly the problem in which I think the SAR government for four administrations now has found itself in.
You write, how long Beijing will leave an overtly feckless appointee to twist in the wind, and with how much grace or how little will she be removed?
Yes, that's essentially it in a nutshell.
I think
in 6 months or so.
Okay, but what's the alternative? They're not going to put in someone who
Rosemary.
Really
no, no, they're not going to. They're not going to put somebody else in right now. She's going to have to ride this out. She's going to have to take the knocks. It's not going to kick upstairs.
They're not going to pull extradition.
Well, it's possible that they might pull the bill. They may do that. Now, they've shelved it. They've withdrawn it for the time being. But what the people in Hong Kong want to hear is that's off. It's not going to come back.
Done deal.
Not for the foreseeable future, that bill is not coming back around. Now, they've done something similar before with national security legislation, which got shelved in the year 2003 after 500,000 people went on the street. This time, you've had two marches with more than a million for one and more than an estimated 2 million for the other. If you're going to shelve something, nothing's going to happen between now and after discussions between President Xi Jinping and Donald Trump.
So, Francis, the thing that is really on my mind here is one word, and that's Tiananmen. At what point does Xi and that group decide we just can't allow this to fester this way because it will undermine everything else we're doing?
I don't think we're near that point, and I don't think that the Central People's Government really wants to hear the word Tiananmen again. That's something that hangs over the government. They can't get rid of it. We have government officials coming out and saying, we proved to be right. Look at the economic progress we've made. Look at all that we've done since then. We've lifted up people out of poverty, et cetera, et cetera. We were right to have made that decision. That's the line, and they're going to stick with it. But I don't think that they're going to call out the PLA. Look, the PLA has bases all over Hong Kong. The PLA has a base that is directly next door to the Hong Kong government's main administration building. I mean, you can walk from one to the other in less than 5 minutes. If they wanted to have soldiers come out, they could do it. They've kept them in the barracks. They've kept them inside. They just know what it would be like if something like that were to happen. So I think they'll find any way to handle this short of having to call a single PLA soldier out if they can avoid it.
I was going to ask, what's the role of Trump in this? Why did you say she won't do anything until talking with Trump?
Because you've got the whole question with Huawei. You've got all those issues that need to be discussed about trade that are sitting there and tariffs right. and all this. That's way more important to them at this moment than Hong Kong. They can, so they can
it's
deal
not like
with
it's
Hong Kong.
A negotiating.
No. Okay. I mean, the issue is there because Trump may raise that issue. He's being pressed to do so from within the Republican Party. He probably will in some way raise the question. I don't think they would discuss it at length, but there's ways that these people raise questions. They say, what about mm-hmm. this? You give a pro forma answer. They say, thank you. And then afterwards they say, well, I raised the question. And that's where it goes. But I think that those issues are so much higher on the Chinese agenda than Hong Kong right now. Hong Kong is for them an internal issue. And they've just issued a statement saying, you know, because the G20 meeting is coming up, there'll be a demonstration in Hong Kong regarding that, because people want the world to get involved, and the Chinese say this is an internal Chinese issue. Everybody else can basically butt out. Mm-hmm. We'll deal with this our way.
Alan? Well, I certainly hope you're right. I have a sense, though, that when you're dealing with dictatorships, it's always been my view that when it becomes exemplary for others to do the same kinds of things, maybe not in Hong Kong, and they're going to have their ears to the ground, then, and by the way, the next question is, okay, so what will the next issue be? Deportation is one. Will that same crowd come out every time they pull something like this?
Deportation of...
Oh, yeah, of the deportation of the people who they want to bring back to China to try.
Extradition.
Oh, the extradition treaty. Okay. Well, that's going to be an issue that needs to be discussed. But, I mean, they're going to take that off. They're going to look at it again. As I said, in 2003, they pulled the national security legislation called Article 23, and that has sat up in a corner collecting dust since then, and they haven't brought it back around. Now, they have found other ways to use existing laws in order to achieve some of what they want, which people told them years ago. Some of these colonial laws left over from the British were draconian, mm-hmm. and they've managed mm-hmm. to use them, and people had said, you know, these laws are there. You could use them, and they have found some ways to use them. But in some ways, they made matters worse by overusing them, by blocking people from getting on a ballot who wanted to run for election. If they get elected, blocking them from taking office. If they get in office, tossing them out for behavior mm-hmm. in the legislative council. I mean, these all make things worse, and you can see why young people in Hong Kong, many of them don't see a future.
Well, one and one makes two, as far as I'm concerned. I hope you're right. I have great respect for you and for what you're saying. But dictatorships have a history in this world. And when they think that their absolute ability to push everybody around is at stake, who knows what they'll do?
If it were to threaten the stability of the Central People's Government, then I think survival would trump everything. Sure. But it doesn't yet, and it doesn't look like it's going to. It seems to be confined to Hong Kong, even if you look around the rest of Asia. Sure. While some people find the Hong Kong demonstrators inspiring, other people look at their cultural situation, political situation, and say, good for Hong Kong, but it that's not going to work here.
It's doomed.
Yes, but the word the great word you just used is yet. Yet.
Yeah, the great qualifier.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. And we have Governor Cuomo joining Alan at 10 o'clock this morning. So we have a few more minutes. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Francis Moriarty, and Sarah Rogerson join us. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll get to those letters in just a second. One of the big stories over the weekend that kind of started off our weekend was President Trump's decision to postpone the mass arrests of immigrant families with deportation orders offered a two-week reprieve to shaken cities and towns Sunday. But faith and immigration leaders say they will continue to mobilize for roundups in case talks between the White House and congressional Democrats back down. After Trump threatened raids a week ago, immigrant rights groups in Chicago, Washington, New York, and nationwide publicized emergency hotlines, alerted volunteers, and hastily arranged gatherings to teach immigrants what to do if an agent knocks on their door. Efforts that are ongoing since the president called off the raids on Saturday. The arrests were set to begin on Sunday. That from the Washington Post. Sarah Rogerson, what should we make of this? Should we be surprised that the president backtracked?
No. Never. There wasn't enough. They're taking TSA agents and Customs and Border Protection agents, which is different from Customs and Border Patrol, out of JFK. If you want to get on an international flight out of JFK, you got to get to the airport pretty early these days because they're so short-staffed that some of the lines are up to 1.5 to 2 hours long just to get through security at JFK. And that's just because they're staffing up the border so heavily. So the idea that they would do mass interior enforcement with what army, I guess, is the question. And then also just the community response. People have just been doing what they've been doing because it's like every 48 hours he threatens something horrible and has empowered local ICE agents to take people in without, in ways that they've not ever done it in the past. And so the community's been on high alert for a long time.
It just seems like it's very similar to the Iran story in the sense of we're going to do this. We're not going to do this.
Yeah. The idea is to sow fear and to get people real excited that hate immigrants to say, all right, he's doing the job that we wanted him to do. And then they check out and it doesn't impact them. So they don't know whether it happened or not. You know, it's his reality show.
I was going to say, I was in New York City earlier this week, and there was a dispute over parking. And a group of immigrants, I don't know where from, Central America someplace, they were in the wrong. They pulled in when another car was backing in. And they're New York, so everybody's out in the street yelling at each other.
Right.
And in a minute, it went from a legitimate, you know, you're a net mother, to this is why people vote for Trump, because of people like you, because you're doing this sort of stuff. It was unbelievable.
For a parking spot?
For a parking spot, yeah. So things things are as bad as I've ever seen them. I can't believe. And I wait in a doctor's office, and a mother pulls her child towards us. Sit down, don't talk to that man. He could be a Muslim. Right in front of everybody. Like, it's okay to do that. Horrible. Horrible.
And this is going back to what we all feared 2, 3, 4 years ago when we said that this behavior could be normalized.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, aren't we seeing that?
It feels like it is.
Hong Kong has had its own anti-immigration issues with people coming down from the mainland into Hong Kong, and that's what's triggered a lot of the protests over recent years was this feeling of being culturally marginalized and losing their position and hearing Mandarin spoken instead of Cantonese and the use of simplified characters instead of the classical complicated characters. It's a deep cultural issue.
Can I ask another? I'm sorry, we're skipping around, but another Hong Kong question. Why is the central government playing at this at all? Like doing strategy and keeping some. Why don't they just march in and take Hong Kong, which they wanted to do anyway?
Well,
what would happen if they did?
Well, on 1997, on midnight of June 30th, they did march in. And they do control it militarily. And if they needed to do something, they could. I think the issue that you're getting at is if Hong Kong isn't able to rule itself, should the central government or would the central government take it over? I think if it was really incapable of governing itself, they would do that. They wouldn't allow it to spin out of control. But so far, they've set up a system. While it makes a mockery of democracy, at least it looks to people from outside as if it's quasi-democratic in terms of picking a leader. But the fact of the matter is, it's a system that China controls basically from beginning to end. It dominates. It has a majority of its own people
but
on the body.
But this look is important for the Chinese government.
Look is important. And also, the China gave its word. Now, you can think that it may or may not mean something, but it did. It signed an international document with Britain, and it promised to the people of Hong Kong that it was going to provide certain things. And if you played along, you would get certain benefits. And it can't be seen, unless it's really life and death, of really going back on that.
Only Trump can do that.
Yeah, well, that's another issue. But what a measure. And so I think that they if worse came to worse, they could send somebody down from Beijing. They could say, you go in there and you rule and you govern it and you do it this way. But that would really trigger, it would be a statement of collapse of what the system they had set up and who's held responsible for that. It would be a big loss of face, and it would say, you know, we couldn't rule ourselves when the Hong Kong people are perfectly aware that if left to their own devices, they could rule themselves. And this coming July 1st, there will be the annual protest march in Hong Kong, which marks the handover anniversary every year. And the size of that march will often be an indicator of how unhappy people are with the government. So we could see another big one.
2 million.
Yeah.
So, Francis,
so why, why do we have marches like that at the border?
It's a really great question.
So, Francis, why did you come back?
Why did I come back? It's a really good question. Part of it is that I had retired from my job and was freelancing, and I realized that freelance rates were equivalent to what I was being paid or less in the 1980s, mm-hmm. and the prices of living in Hong Kong went to higher than Manhattan levels, and the numbers just didn't work out, and it was just a good time to come back and be with family. So that basically is the end of it. But do I miss Hong Kong? Sure I do.
And just to answer Rosemary's question about why we don't see marches on the border, those borders are already heavily militarized. It's very difficult to even protest in front of a federal detention facility. They make it intentionally so.
Interesting.
So, and there are no photos allowed. There, even lawyers are heavily restricted in terms of what they're allowed to carry into the facility.
So censorious.
Have you been down there, Sarah?
I have not been to the border. I have been I've been to a lot of detention facilities, including the one here in one of the detention facilities here in New York, the Buffalo Detention Facility. Yeah. They're looking for more volunteers, so we're thinking about taking students down there. But I've been focusing our efforts on what's going on here in New York State.
These stories about conditions of children, I think that could cut across any political line. Is that a sensitive point right now?
One would hope, and it's very sensitive. But I don't think that there's we're not seeing the level of outcry that I would expect.
No soap.
We have just about 2 minutes, and I want to get to the letters that we have, at least as many as I can. Pam writes, detention camps separating families. Dear panel, the news about the detention policy seems to get worse by the day as we learn more about what is being done in the name of our government. I would appreciate the perspectives of your panel on the issue, and particularly ideas about what the average citizen can do to change these inhumane policies now. So we really did address the first part of that. Let's talk about the second part of what average people can do.
There are a number of demonstrations that are being planned around the country. Plugging into your local organization here locally, every single county has, except for Rensselaer County, has groups. Well, and there is a group actually that's organized in Rensselaer County. So if you link up with a group on Facebook locally, you should be able to find out when there are marches and demonstrations. The Saratoga Immigration Coalition has several planned. And aside from elevating your voice, you can open up your wallets and give to the organizations that are fighting on the border. Raices and Al Otro Lado are the main legal organizations. And there are groups locally, too. The Legal Project and Centro Civico are doing a lot of work here in Albany. It's tough because people want to help. And it seems hollow to say, well, call your representative, raise your voice, and give money. because I feel like we've been doing that for years and years. But it's really the only way is to demonstrate, literally.
Do the children in detention get vaccinations?
So I guess what I would say is, from what we know, they're more likely to be given behavior-altering medication.
Which has nothing to do with vaccination and prevention of
make
disease.
Make it easier to deal with them,
correct,
to do what they want them
to
do.
So if you're worried about vaccinations by people who are not getting vaccinations for reasons of personal belief or religious persuasion, you should be extremely worried about these kids who have no vaccinations and they're exposed to Lord knows what.
Yeah. I mean, I there is some level of healthcare that is allegedly happening, but it's sort of drowned out by all of the awfulness that's happening in all of these facilities.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there this morning. My thanks to everybody. Francis Moriarty, thank you very much for being with us. Very
thank
nice to have your
me.
Expertise here. Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow. Thank
yes.
you very much.
Thank
and
you.
Sarah Rogerson, thank you as always.
Always a pleasure.